It's great to be here. It's my first visit here. But if you like pizza, I can come back more often. So I'm going to talk about some recent work I did with Sebastian De Haro on electromagnetic duality and holography. So there are various motivations for this study. The most important ones are that we want to initially understand what is the strongly coupled image of water volume theory of which is the superamnios which lives on coincident D2 grains. So in the infrared limit, that should give us the water volume theories which live on coincident M2 grains. And this theory, although we know the field content of the water volume theory of membranes, the theory is not explicitly constructed and it's not really well understood. So that's sort of the fundamental motivation why we wanted to look at various perturbations of the theory by looking at the bulk and applying the EDS CFT correspondence, trying to extract information about deformations for the theory of the theory and various limits. So a more direct and more direct motivation was really that we can realize in an interesting paper, he basically showed that modulo the details for a billion gauge theory which lives in four dimensions by holography. These electromagnetic rotations of the four-dimensional EM theory should be related to what he called S duality for three-dimensional super conformal field theories, which are of the transcendence type. So what we do in this work was really to realize explicitly, especially from the bulk point of view of his proposals. And along the way, we found some interesting generalizations to the case when you perturb the conformal field theory by some massive operators. In order that the system that we study is well in control, another motivation for studying this sort of dualities that they seem to be important for understanding the more complete theory, which is the gauged SO8 supergravity. So this is sort of a minimal version. And there are some nice properties in for bulk dimensions about this ENM system, which is the gauge field is classically conformally invariant, and also in four bulk dimensions. For three boundary dimensions, you don't have a complication of conformal anomaly. So some work on this aspect some work along these lines have been done by my collaborator and Pat Koo in the scalar case. So this is also sort of a continuation of what we did in that case about using vacuum solutions of classical system in the bulk as probes of the through holography of the CFT. So the outline is most of the work are going to be from point of view of the bulk, and so I will proceed first to find the bulk solutions. It turns out due to the conformal invariant Cauchy, this equation solution can be solved quite explicitly. And some of these bulk solutions are interesting by themselves to look at. We discussed some of these special cases. And then we discuss how one realizes S duality in a special formalism, which is the first order formalism, mainly because it's convenient for comparing to the boundary CFT. And then there's the sort of little bit of formalism that we develop in order to impose various boundary conditions from the back point of view. This is necessary because these S dualities, which are realized in the bug, are to correspond to transforming the boundary theory, corresponds to changing the boundary theories between different boundary theories, which correspond to different boundary conditions in the bug theory. And finally, we did some holographic computations of the correlators of and the action of the CFT, and just to show that whole picture actually comes together, and there's sort of a nice pattern of how S duality and RG flow comes together, release different boundary CFTs. So some notations is can be confusing because we have different kinds of Legendre transformations. So these ones will be, so the special thing to notice would be these ones are for the SQ. And these some field redefinitions just to make the bulk action in the first order formalism more transparent in terms of S duality. So first, the bulk solutions. So the bulk system is just a coupled system of four-dimensional gravity plus electromagnetic. So the equations are rather simple, and we look for asymptotically ADS solutions of this system, of the coupled matter gravity system. So we can always expand using the Gram-Fefferman system, coordinate system. And we would be looking at the radial gauge just for convenience. There's no principle that says you can't do it gauge invariantly. There's a very specific form of the stress tensor given by the that you can get from the electromagnetism. What's important to what's interesting to notice about what's obvious is here is that if you have a set dual field configuration, so for instantaneous solutions of the bulk system, you would have vanishing stress energy tensor. And so just from general arguments, we know that the bulk system is actually pretty much fixed by the first few coefficients in expansion in the Gram-Fefferman coordinate system. So what you really need to find out is to solve the equations perturbatively up to the leading orders. So in this case, you need the first two coefficients for the gauge field, and then also just the leading coefficient for the gravity for the matching. So actually, for all the solutions that we discussed, it turned out we can consistently just take the boundary to take the conformal magic to be flat. And then we can solve the magic, and it's given, as expected, it's given by the stress energy, the back reaction to the flat magic is given by the stress energy tensor of the matter system. And so for the Euro, in the Euro recipe of the SFT correspondence, we interpret the leading coefficients in the gauge theory, in the gauge field expansion as respectively the source and the operator conformal dimension to in the CFP. And what, and there, when you solve these systems, there are certain Wada entities which are imposed by general covariance this corresponds to taking this specific form of the effective action for the field theory. So all of these were pretty straightforward as in any system you try to solve in public. And so as I said, the solutions are really straightforward because you can in the Pankhurst hash, because of the conformal invariance of the equation solution, you can map the solution. There is a one-to-one correspondence between the solutions in a flat R4 and the system we are considering. So one thing to notice is that the Bach equation solution actually imposes a constraint on the field we call F, which is the which is one of the coefficients in the expansion of the Bach gauge field. And this this constraint this constraint here basically tells you that due to the gauge invariance in the Bach, there is a conserved global current associated with this field in boundary theory. So we find the exact solution of these couple of systems of matter and gravity, and then we impose regularity on the solutions just to make sure that the dual field theory at the ADS boundary actually captures all the dynamics of the Bach system, so you don't want any divergence at R equal infinity. And so this condition can be written as a relationship in between the two coefficients of the expansion. So this condition, so what we did here was just for convenience, we did it in Euclidean coordinate. So in Lorentzian signature, this condition is basically that the positive frequency modes in the Bach should be going toward the horizon. And you can check explicitly that the analytically continued Lorentzian solutions have vanishing action. So we're indeed having computing. So in terms of the correlation functions, you're indeed computing something between two eigen states. So so one particularly interesting solution of the Bach system is when you impose self-dual solutions, self-dual conditions. So these things we call them self-dual boundary conditions because actually you can show that once you impose these self-duality conditions on the boundary fields, they actually maps to instanton solution throughout the bulk. And so this condition also guarantees there is no back reaction on the original pure ADS geometry. The next thing considered, we imposed sort of a linear relationship between the two boundary fields. And this actually gives you the so-called master equation for a special theory in three dimensions. This is the topologically massive theory, which is also quantum mechanically equivalent to the self-dual massive theory found by Pierre Thompson and Wendell Crewson. So this theory has just one propagating degrees of freedom, and later we'll show actually the effective action for the system is an interesting CFT, which so this CFT actually arises as the large flavor limit of three-dimensional QED coupled to a number of fermions, So we don't really understand why there's this this specific effective action shows up, but maybe there's there are some interesting implications for the for theory for that membrane water volume action. If you're just in flat space time, then the
So
you
say you have a massive gauge theory in
physical
systems, so how do you
get escape from
that?
But so the CLP is really the infrared limit of this system.
Which does
or
does not contain a probability
distribution? So this theory contains one propagating system, degree of freedom. So the infrared limit is basically so the infrared limit has also one propagating degree freedom, but the action is not just the effective action is actually non-local.
So
the identification here, so actually in our system, what's not written here explicitly is a factor of n to the 3½ powers. So there seems to be identification between this n to the 3½ and in the large flavor limit of 3-dimensional QED, you just got an half of this action. So we don't really have an explanation for that. So in fast space time, if the stress energy vanishes, you just have zero action. So here it turns out, so this, as we'll see as sort of a theme throughout these computations, the interplay between the bulk contribution, the boundary theory, is what makes all these considerations interesting than just considering purely three-dimensional systems. So here, because BDS has this conformal boundary, there's actually a contribution to the action. So you can solve the self-duality equation plus the regularity requirement, and just in three dimensions, you find these solutions going by one function which you can pick, and for this specific form of this function, we find that these solutions actually contribute an action which looks very much like an instant time. These solutions are, in fact, so they contain an arbitrary number, but the form of the action, the solution actually looks like the Euro instanton solution, and there's a size parameter which doesn't change the contribution. So the main focus of this these calculations was actually to show as duality in the bulk actually leads to what we call flows between different boundary CFPs. So we first tried to realize as duality using a first order formalism because it incorporates the two boundary degrees of freedom which we impose the bulk conditions on, which we impose the boundary conditions on. So this form can be, this form of realizing SDIT is very common for comparing the relationship between the boundary conditions that we impose and the different CFTs you obtain after after you do the electromagnetic transformation in bulk.
So this slide is basically just the field redefinitions that we do and the first order action for the electromagnetic system. And as duality is just realized by this group of changes of the wire flows and fields. And what one finds is doing this transformation, of course, doesn't change the bulk action, but there is a boundary term which appears due to these transformations. And this actually is exactly what, so rewriting this term into another form using this, instead of the field strength here, use the, just the gauge potential. You see that?
This is the action unit useful in the norms.
But
is it the action unit useful?
Yeah, this is the action unit as for, but actually due to conformal environments, you can just drop these vectors and they would look like this exactly in R4. But this is the Euclidean form, but I mean Lorentzian form can be done. So after rewriting these fields in terms of the gauge potential, you see that this change between the two actions is actually the Legendre transform that was proposed by Witten. So basically you add to the original system a chain silence coupling between the dual gauge potential and the original gauge potential, and then you if you integrate out the original gauge potential, then you the new action you got is basically the SDO action. So actually, you can realize more general electromagnetic rotations on the fields, which we call E and F in the first order for a reason. So just for simplicity, we put data to zero. And what these electromagnetic rotations do intuitively is they change the bulk electric and magnetic sources. And so in terms of boundary conditions, it, and as you can see in this example, it basically transforms the Newman boundary conditions to Dirichlet boundary condition. So this is the general story for what these bulk rotations that do to the boundary theory. So in terms of just from the perspective of the bulk, you just change the boundary conditions. But due to this change in boundary conditions, you can see that the boundary theory actually has to be modified in a non-trivial way to accommodate this based on holography. This example I show here was actually a bit naive, that I just picked the SDO field strength to vanish when I perform the bulk rotation. Actually, there are more general boundary conditions you can impose. So these are, in the case, there is a good analogy between this and the conformally coupled scalar case. So in that case, if you want to impose a boundary condition which is different from the Newman boundary condition, what you have to do is to introduce some extra couplings on the extra couplings on the boundary in the boundary theory, and what that does would then change the boundary condition, and those are the so-called double-traced deformations of the boundary theory. So what we have here is just generalized diversion principle, which tells you the stationary points of the combined bulk and boundary action for more general by introducing a general boundary action term. And
So this is basically the pair of equations which gives you the consistent boundary conditions. And the example here is the massive massive boundary condition, which is this. So to achieve these sort of conditions between the two fields, you actually have to introduce a boundary term to the action. So there's another thing to watch out for is that we want to, from the bulk point of view, we want the action, we want the solutions to be regular. And that actually imposes and actually requires that this parameter here is negative. So it's not just it's not just straightforward with the mass. So, but anyway, so there seems to be a constraint on how you can deform the theory. And there are more more general boundary couplings that you can introduce, and also external sources. So in general, what we did here are just introducing the marginal and massive deformations of the original boundary CFT. And what you can do see is that the variation principle tells you, gives you this pair of equations. There seems to be, there is, in fact, an obvious symmetry between these equations in motion. So realized by these exchanges. So these things are essentially the electromagnetic duals of each other. And these equations can also be solved explicitly. So you can find, in general, these solutions. But in general, they will have back reactions on the metric. However, they can still be studied using the approach that we consider for the self-dual solutions, because the back reaction of these gauge fields to the original metric actually turns out to show up only at the third order of the action. So in the near boundary CFT, these things are actually, the back reactions don't matter much.
Sorry, I'm not sure I understand. So you're saying that if you do an S2L transformation in the bulk,
yeah,
and that causes addition of some.
So if you do. Yeah, so that is essentially what happens. So actually. So if you indeed perform bulk electromagnetic duality, it actually adds new terms to the boundary action.
But usually it looks things that two theories that it but is as valid, they are the same theory.
So they are so
no.
Okay, so in flat space time that would be the whole story. But here what seems to appear is that the action in bulk indeed remains invariant under these SDIT transformations. But because of the presence of the boundary, we actually introduce new terms in the boundary theory.
SDIT transformations causes sort of motion from one boundary to another? And
yeah, so.
So it's not a symmetry of the theory?
So from bulk point of view, if you were to just compute a purely bulk action for these theories,
uh-huh,
it remains invariant. But the boundary theory seems to suggest that that's not true, from at least from the holomorphic point of view. So if there's a conformal boundary, if there's a conformal boundary, actually, the SDIT transformations does give you a different theory.
So for
more general matters, you would have to introduce counter terms and cancel the infrared divergences. But for this system, it turns out you don't have to explicitly do that because of conformal invariants. So this bound, so if you compute the effective action for boundary theory, actually no displacement counter term has to be introduced.
But the scale is, it could be a finite counter term, right? It's a regularized boundary, and you can probably construct them in such a way that they will precisely cancel the contribution from the bulk. So this way, this would be a way of introducing regularized boundary in such a way that all the framework is manifestly has duality to bear and the problems.
I think you say something different.
That's not clear to you whether he probably is assuming that he says there are no divergences, so we are not going to introduce any counter.
Yes.
But what I'm saying is that that's a finite term that comes out from, it is true that, you know, well, even in the absence of magic fields, there are finite counter terms that you can construct. So my point is simply is that you might be able to construct finite counter terms in such a way that they will transform so that that's going to go away.
Yeah, so that's. So I would say in general that would have been a valid approach to take, but never mind this electromagnetic rotation that I'm doing, for a general boundary condition, for example, if I imposed either the Dirichlet boundary condition or the Neumann boundary condition, I should be able to just compute about renormalized action for the boundary, without these rotations in mind, and there should be a consistent approach to do that. So it seems to me that if you just impose the Euro boundary conditions, there's no obvious reason to introduce this extra structure that.
What's the reason if you want to preserve the S2L?
Okay, so
the S2L is really a symmetry that you are forced to do.
Yeah, so if you take that perspective, yes, but I can just forget about S2L and I have some arbitrary boundary conditions. I can just, I should have, so I would give argument in a different dimension, for example. So suppose I'm not doing these computations in four dimensions. There's no electromagnetic duality. There's no well-defined electromagnetic duality for example, for this UN gauge theory. So I would not actually try to manufacture such terms in the
sometimes you force based on other arguments. For example, sometimes you mm-hmm. force to introduce finite counter terms if there is a limit in your theory where you restore supersymmetry, and mm-hmm. then the action must vanish on a supersymmetric background, and that uniquely prescribes you finite counter terms.
Okay, I have to say that we didn't.
So by your logic, you don't have to do that, but then that simply means that mm-hmm. you define your theory of the UV in such a way where the supersymmetry is broken explicitly.
Okay, so in general, these boundary conditions does break supersymmetry if the bulk theory doesn't already have.
I just think that in general, it's an important thing to keep in mind that they can be important in higher dimensions.
So I guess what really made us to take this approach was basically that Witten's argument, how these things were related in the first place. So the generalizations are just two more general boundary conditions. So I would have to see have to think about that. Whether
so if you evaluate the partition function of the two actions, you get what is the contribution of this boundary term? Is it a trivial one or
to the what?
The partition function.
Yeah.
So do you get that what is geometrical interpretation has this in the boundary term?
Okay, so a generic term would be the theta term, but there are some terms which do not come that way. So, in terms of Bach theory, the most straightforward realization was actually just these generalized boundary conditions for the expansion of the Bach field. And for example, if I introduced, if I cut this theta term, that obviously already gave me a boundary, I can consider it as a boundary action, part of the boundary action. So I wouldn't see, I can see what sort of modular function or modular forms come out of this, because we really haven't done that quantum computation. But I actually don't see straightforwardly how these more general terms are related to that approach. But what we are considering here is really sort of a truncation of some Gibbs supergravity theory. So maybe there are other multipaths which have to be taken into account to realize what's the geometric meaning of these extra terms. Let me go back a little bit. So these pair of equations give you the consistent boundary conditions, and you can just, they're pretty straightforward to work out. So actually what happens is you can either extremize the combined bulk and boundary action in the rotated frame or in the original variables, and these seem to commute with each other. And so the most convenient way to write down the rotated boundary conditions are just in by differentiating the rotated action with respect to the origin variables. And generic values of these transformations, these are sine or cosine or sine or cosine, depending on the signature we're taking, Euclidean or Lorentzian. But for generic values, you can see these two conditions are not independent, so one implies the other by taking the curl of the first one, you got the second one. So what's non-trivial is actually for the extreme cases where one of these vanishes. So in general, they are not independent, but when one of these vanishes, you actually have to analyze it a bit differently, and that's how you actually have sort of discontinuity from the, in terms of boundary condition, from the Neumann to the Dirichlet boundary condition. So it's just another simple example. And actually, also the regularity condition on the fields, on the parameters, the massive deformation works out. So there's a little bit of, again, there is something I would like to compare these combined boundary actions with to the purely three-dimensional action. So if you just consider a purely three-dimensional action, the only invariant ones are trivial actions describing 2 degrees of freedom, which are not coupled to each other. So it turns out for rather generic boundary couplings, these theories are actually, at least the equation motion for this degree of freedom is invariant under these electromagnetic rotations. So that seems to suggest there's some self-duality under the bulk electromagnetic duality that's going on here. So in general, for bulk rotation, bulk as duality, it seems to suggest that indeed even the boundary theory seems to be invariant. So it's just a peculiarity that we observe. And there is some other special thing. So actually, the Euclidean version of these boundary rotations are boosts. And there are some special, so these different boundary actions actually have different properties under these boost transformations. So for example, the trivial boundary action would actually become a linear one, which still doesn't break conforming invariants, of course. The massive one actually, in general, becomes a, so in general, three-dimensional massive self-dual theory would just become a massive theory would just under these boots would just become the self-dual one. So maybe that has a physical interpretation in terms of under the boost, how the degree of freedom that's realized changes, because we actually have to redefine the fields to get this thing. But another thing to keep in mind is the stress tensor actually is invariant under these boosts. So it's not clear why actually in these sort of flows you got this theory. But the explanation could be just because this specific form of the boundary action actually stays invariant under these boosts. So to actually understand the generic structure of the boundaries CFT under these transformations, we actually compute for generic boundary condition imposed on the fields the effective action. So it's, in a sense, it's very similar to a conformally coupled scalar in four dimensions, which is that because of the specific dimensions of the field A and F, which are 1 and 2, there are two conservation scales. So these for the original CFT, you actually can introduce a dual CFT, which is obtained by just doing the gender transform on the effective on the generating function. So it interchanges the generating function with the effective potential, because it changes the row of them. So and when you compute the one point function for the operator, you find that it just changes the original dimension two operator, which is a conserved parent to the Beach field. So you might wonder why I'm introducing this extra structure here. So it turned out this Legendre transform here, which interchanges the, you know, the quantization and the dual polarization, combined with the Baukast duality that we talked about, which interchanges the electromagnetic sources and the currents, and which also leads to S-duality transformation, obviously, on the two-point functions and the one-point function. When these two things are, you can perform for the original source and operator, you can perform a Legendre transform to the dual CFT. And you can also then, on that CFT, you can further apply these Baukast duality transformations. So you might wonder, where does that get you? And if the answer is that the original theory you started with, and the theory you got after these two Legendre, different kinds of Legendre transforms, is related by adding to the boundary theory a massive deformation, and then follow the RJ flow to the infrared. So this is exactly the same result as in the conformally coupled scalar case, where you introduce a double transformation to the boundary theory, and then you follow the RJ fluid to the infrared. So, so based on these observations, and the motivating point to consider the RJ flow is really because of the step where we interchange the operator and the source in the quantization. So now new operator actually has a dimension line instead of two. So RJ flow what basically does is about the dimensions. So because of the room light renormalization, it changes the dimension of the operator. And so I apologize for the different color scheme here. What seems to appear in terms of these boundary effective field theories is that there is a structure which are between different boundary theories which are related by S duality and the interchange of interchange, which is the interchange of bulk sources between electron, electric and magnetic kind, and also the Legendre transform with the S dualities would be the vertical ones, and those ones are the ones which interchange the original CFT and the dual CFT in terms of schemes, different polarizations for quantization, and the diagonal lines which are massive deformations plus RJ flow. So at least in this well controlled case of EYM billion gauge field, the dual CFT seem to have a very nice pattern. And it realizes the bulk as duality transformations, the sort of canonical transformation that you perform in quantization, and also RJ flow, which connects the UV to the IR. This would be it would be interesting to see what this actually tells us. Maybe there could be generalizations of these to more general boundary theories, and it would be interesting to know, for example, there seems to be applications of these sort of duality transformations in the SO8 theory, which was recently applied to condensed matter systems by Herzog and Shapstev and other authors. So we would like to understand if there is, in general, a similar pattern in the non-Abelian generalizations. So that was actually I show the explicit computation for the massing deformation, and if you took the, so you can compute the two-point functions from the effective action. So the effective action is really some on-shell readout, which is when you introduce some external source and also impose regularity relations between the two fields. And you got for fluctuations which are caused by this source, you find the two-point function. And in the infrared, you need this result. So the first result, the first term is the lossy contact term, and the second term is that of the correlation function of the two dimensional line operator. So these three substance sizes the this diagonal line that I mentioned here. So just up to normalizations, this is the S dual of up to some normalization, you can show that this is a dimension one operator, which is the gauge field first, and then you can also see that the couplings are those which are given to you by the S duality transformation. So, okay, so that was, that seems to be the general structure which came out of this boundary set piece with U1 global symmetry. And another point is that I told you that this self-dual massive theory in three dimensions can be understood as a consequence of self-duality under electromagnetic duality in the bulk. So it turns out actually that action that I wrote down, effective action that I wrote down in the infrared limit for the self-dual massive theory is generic except for the theta term, in the sense that if you just go to the IR of these boundary conditions, the extra piece in these generalized boundary conditions, which involves a derivative on the power of the momentum, can be ignored, and you just get back the original Dirichlet boundary condition, and you can show that this effective action for this Dirichlet boundary condition is again this large conformal point of QED3. So these theories were studied by Kapruski and Strasser in the context of mirror symmetry and three-dimensional supersymmetric field theories. So this is just explicitly showing that you indeed got the effective action for this self-dual massive case we mentioned earlier. So I've tried to summarize what we did, although it was a bit scattered here and there. We seem to still lack a really good understanding of what's the relationship between this as-duality and the more general duality in the SLE theory. But so what we did was we looked for classical solutions, and we found some interesting ones in which are symbolic ADS. Actually, it turns out there are more general solutions than what I showed you here, and they in general have less boundary actions than to the ADS metric than in other dimensions. And we found that some the as-dual bulk actions are actually as-dual bulk solutions are actually lead you to the as-dual topologically massive theory in three dimensions, and that theory was can be understood as a consequence of bulk as-duality, and there for general coupling constants, so general boundary theories can be interpreted as a one-parameter flow introduced by electromagnetic rotations, and also so the marginal deformations in the boundary theory just cause interpolation between different boundary conditions, which preserve conformal invariance, and the same thing happens for massive ones, and we also found that these massive deformations give you massive deformations when coupled with RG flow. They give you the as-dual gauge field of dimension one, which is whose original gauge field was the dimension one source for the dimension two operator in the CFT, original CFT. That is a typo there. So in IR, in general, we find a generic three-dimensional conformal field theory. So one of the difficulties is for understanding the M2 brand world volume theory is actually strongly coupled. And there the degrees, number of degrees of freedom is related to and to the three halves rather than n squared, like in the case of supranumerals theory. So here there seems to be some relation between the strong Hopkin limit and this large enough limit of three-dimensional QED. So to find out whether there are non-trivial implications, we actually would like to study some non-Abelian generalizations of the system studied here. And the natural minimal generalization would be just SE2 theory. And this SE2 theory is actually a consistent truncation of SO8 gauge couples, gauge superiority theory with the cosmological constant. So this is a truncation where you have no scalar fields, so there are no non-trivial scalar potentials to worry about. So that might tell us more about where we really want to get, which is the effective theory for the M2 grids. And these things have various other generalizations in terms of either scalars or higher spin fields or more importantly, gravity. So in linearized gravity case, you just have electromagnetic rotations between the Riemann tensor and the dual of the Riemann tensor. So it's interesting to understand those generalizations too. Finally, this work, there are a lot of things which are special about ADS4 and which are not well understood. So in terms of the long-term perspective, we would like to understand more about what these special features might tell us about the Ham theory strongly coupled element. Thank you for listening.
Any questions? If no questions, let's thank the speaker again.